Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams
and Elizabeth Wallace, and you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 430. And tonight, we're recapping Welcome to Night Vale number 256, The Book of Lost Things. And you can definitely feel Bree Williams' influence on this episode because, I mean, anything that involves, a collection of odd things is definitely right up her alley.
Well, there's also another influence on this episode. So Cecil tells everybody that Harrison Kipp is going to be coming in to talk about his religion, which is never named in this entire episode. No. We still don't know what the name is, but Jeffrey Craner does the voice of Harrison Kipp, and I'm not sure, has he done that before? I don't think that he has.
I'm not sure that he has. Yeah, it's interesting because, of course, we've heard Joseph Fink a bunch of times on the podcast, but never Jeffrey Craner. So, yeah, Harrison Kipp is here in a celebration, I guess, of the Feast of the Rattlings, but before we get into that, Cecil wants to go into some of the latest news, and Ryan LaFleur, he is the owner of the rideshare business, which I don't remember if they mentioned the name of the rideshare business, the one that's, you know, all the cars are driven by ghosts. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they mentioned it before. It's called, you know, it sounds very French. It's called Detour.
Detour. Yes, it's actually been sold to a very wealthy investor, which makes Ryan LaFleur the second wealthiest person in Night Vale after one of the angels who used to be the great big business tycoon. Mm. And Brian's mother says, oh, great. That's going to mean he's going to get a real big head about this, which Cecil doesn't think that's a very healthy family dynamic. But that's kind of where the news story ends.
Yep. We also find out that a spaceship crashed in the wasteland. There's like aliens spilling out all over the place. So Cecil asks, whoever lost it, can you please come get it? It's making a mess.
And John Peters, you know, the farmer, his hedge mage experience in the field of imaginary corn, it's been shut down. And I have to say, I can understand their reasons for shutting it down. John Peters was caught selling snow cones to underage customers. And we just cannot allow that, because everybody thinks it's fine just a few times, and then before you know it, you've got kids eating raspberry snow cones and they haven't even shown a license.
Yeah, it was just very disappointing. John Peters was saying he can't be expected to check the ID of everybody before he gets a raspberry snow cone, so it's so disappointing.
So this is where we first hear Harrison Kipp talking, where I wrote down, wait, is that Joseph Fink or Jeffrey Craner? It's Jeffrey Craner!
Yay!
Yeah, he wants to talk about the history of his religion. And as far as I can make out, it was like a woman hundreds of years ago heard the prophecies and she wrote them down in a book, and then she died and she was forgotten. And 5 years ago, they discovered the book and they've started a little religion, social group gathering, whatever, where they just meet to read the book. And he wants Cecil to read the book aloud, which Cecil says, we have really strict rules about a separation of church and radio stations, and it's not really what we do here. And Harrison is like, oh, no, you have to do it because to not do it would be rude. And we've got real strong rules about being rude.
Yeah. And Cecil tries to get him to say the name of the religion, but Kipp never does. It never even is said once. But Cecil finally agrees. And so he reads from the book. And it's sort of a story, this first one, a story about sheep, I guess.
About somebody seeing sheep and realizing, wait a minute, have you always just assumed that they're sheep and never found out? And I think it ends with the person getting devoured.
Yeah, sounds about right. Cecil, of course, has to get back to the regular radio stuff, so we get the horoscopes!
Yay! Okay, so Aquarius was fun, I thought, because Aquarius, you will meet a beautiful woman today. It's the bank teller, and she's just being polite, so be businesslike as possible, and then go on with your day.
Yeah. Now, I didn't write down exactly who this one was for, but I liked it. It said, just remember that the phrase, only floss the teeth that you want to keep, remember that it's want to keep, not will keep.
And Capricorn was surprisingly benign this time, because usually they have like the worst set aside for Capricorn, I think. But it was just, the answers to your next few questions are no, yes, shellfish and herald. Just in case, you know, you wanted to save some time.
Cecil tries to get onto the fact that the Night Vale Medical Board has an announcement about a disturbing rise in a particular thing, but he can't get it out because Harrison Kipp just interrupts him and says that reading from the book is much more important than some kind of announcement.
And I completely did not write down what this next passage was all about.
Yeah, all I wrote down was, why? Why not? That's pretty much it. It's a lot of questions, and do you really need to know why? And maybe you should stop asking. Just knock that all the hell off. It's a the long and the short of it.
We move on from there to traffic, and there has been a slight backup on Saguaro Drive because a man has gotten out of his car and he is like accosting people with a pebble that he's holding, saying things like, rate and review my podcast. Have you listened to my podcast yet? So yeah, the podcast thing is getting a little crazy, and we can attest to that because we're part of it. Rate and review.
That's right. And then we go into the sponsors, but before Cecil can actually say who the sponsor is, Kip interrupts again to say that the episode has been brought to you by the local ritual mound, and Cecil keeps trying to come in and say, no, it's by Chick-fil-A. And then they do this very cool coordinated thing where they go back and forth trying to say who the sponsor is before Kip finally finishes up with saying, you know, brought to you by the local ritual mound, blood for the blood god. And Cecil's like, oh, wow, yeah, that's the same special as Chick-fil-A. Oh, okay, that's cool.
Also, Chick-fil-A wants to make sure everybody knows that there is no human meat at Chick-fil-A.
Good to know, man. I always liked in The Good Place where she said something. She was talking about how complicated it is to be a good human being. And she's like, on Earth is a chicken sandwich that if you eat it, it means you hate gay people. And it's delicious. Yeah, it's kind of true. But honestly, you can find chicken. You can find good chicken sandwiches in other places.
Yeah, one of these days I want to try that where you brine chicken in pickle juice, I think, and then fry it. And supposedly that's how you get the flavor. I don't know. I haven't tried it because I haven't fried chicken since Nathan tried frying chicken one time and the chicken fell off the fork and splashed into the oil and covered his arm with burning oil. And that meant he had to go to the hospital and it was nasty. So no frying here. Certainly not no deep frying.
Yeah, that'd be enough to turn me off the idea of frying anything anyway. So yeah. Okay, so I feel like Cecil is kind of tired at this point of Kip being so vague. So he starts playing this game called Get to Know Ya, where he asks a bunch of rapid fire questions. And one of the questions he asks Kip is, what's your favorite weather? And Kip's like, what do you mean? You know, the weather. And Kip's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. He says, oh, come on. It sounds like this. And then we go to the weather.
And then we go to the weather, which is nice. I love when they still keep coming up with new ways to introduce the weather. It's always fun. Now, the weather this time was bouncy. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any other notes.
No. Yeah. I was about to say it's kind of poppy, I suppose. I liked it. It was called This Machine Used to Kill Fascist by Walter, etc.
Okay. So when we get back from the weather, this is where the Bree Williams influence really kicks in, because it is a list of lost things from the Book of Lost Things. Yeah. And it's like a little freeform poem, basically.
Yeah, all talking about things that you might have had at some point. It's both physical and non-physical objects. Remember, one was the first time your grandmother ever spoke to you as one adult from another, and you were so surprised by it, you weren't really paying attention to what she said, and she never tried again. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's poignant. Wow.
That is rather poignant. Jeez.
And Cecil finishes reading it, and you should definitely listen to it, because it's a really nice little list and everything. And Cecil finishes it, and he liked it, too. He said it was really beautiful, and Kip said that it was all thanks to the great big mouth in the sky. And Cecil goes, what?
And he says, you know, that great big mouth, the human mouth with the lips and the teeth and everything that fills up most of the sky. And Cecil's like, I don't think I've ever noticed that. And Harrison says, that's weird. You're weird.
So Cecil signs us off, and Kip reminds us that I think it's every other Tuesday in his backyard, they have a meeting of this religious group, which he still doesn't identify, and says that it's perfectly fine for newcomers to come by because they very rarely sacrifice newcomers at the church.
Also, bring a homemade snack, but no peanuts, because they've got someone with an allergy.
And that's it. That's the end of the episode. It's nice. Yeah, it's a good standalone episode in the Bree Williams style.
Yeah, very fun. Now, what's a little bit less fun is literally right before we started recording this podcast, I finished the last episode of Mayor of Kingstown. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but now I'm kind of hoping it is the last episode of Mayor of Kingstown because, oh my God, I'm bummed out.
Yeah, it is. It was. I've been waiting for you to get to this episode. I'm like, I mean, it's not a bad episode. Not really. However, the story went to this place where you're like, oh man, they really went there. Giant spoiler warnings, of course.
I had to look. I mean, the episode was only like maybe 5 or 10 minutes longer than the episodes usually are. It was like a little bit over an hour, but there was so much stuff happening in this episode. So it's like, okay, It was an interesting way to do the cold open of the episode because it was the ending of the episode with Mike walking around a boat with splatters of blood on him. And meanwhile, this gigantic gun battle taking place on a bridge with police cars arriving. So, yeah, and then they jump back a little bit. And you see Warden Kareem Moore sitting at his breakfast table with a gun that he cocks into position. And then you flash to the outside of the house. And I thought for sure we were going to hear a gunshot because this is the warden that was basically told by the people in charge of the prison that because there was an attack on his watch and he still doesn't know who managed to figure out how the prisoners that were targeted were in the yard at the time, they're going to fire him and he's not going to get his pension. I mean, it's just like, they tell him that he can like start over and there's other towns and other prisons. And he's like, it would take me 30 years to get back to where I am now. So it's a really horrible position, but he doesn't shoot himself. He walks outside. And then we've got Evelyn is talking with Ian, and Evelyn has figured it out that Ian must have brought a dangerous prisoner to that whistleblower's house and had him killed. Even though that wasn't Ian's intention, that was what happened. I was like, oh, wow, Evelyn, that's really resourceful of you. And I can't believe nobody else put things together because it was just like,
right.
he took no precautions. I mean, it's so easy to track when a prisoner was out of the prison, but she's after the SWAT leader, Robert. So I think this is all just one step in her process to try to get Robert off the street because she knows he's dangerous. And he proceeds to prove that he's dangerous because he's just like, with everybody that he's talking to, well, Ian might turn on him and Evelyn needs to back off. And you, Kyle, need to show that you're loyal to us on the squad and not your brother. And I'm just like, how many people was he prepared to take out to make sure that Evelyn didn't come after him for what he did during the riot when he was basically killing everybody in sight?
Yeah, it's just, it's such a terrifying position for her to be in because she doesn't want to take kickbacks. She doesn't want to be like this useless figurehead in the department. She wants to actually make things better, but it is so corrupt in town and so many people have already died for opening their mouths. So I mean, at least it's good that she's got Mike on her side, even though she doesn't really, I mean, sure they have sex every once in a while, but she doesn't like Mike or anything he does, but he knows that she's one of the good people, mm-hmm. you know, and I hope that keeps Mike safe, but I'm not sure that it will.
Well, I mean, after telling Robert, no, you're not going to touch a hair on Evelyn's head. But he does go to talk to her to try to convince her to back off, and she's not going to do it. But she says, there's still good people in this town, and I'm looking at one of them right now, which I think mm-hmm. is the nicest thing she's said to Mike for the entire series.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, yeah.
And I did think it was funny that Ian finally came clean and told Mike what was happening and that Evelyn was coming after him. And it's just, you know, Mike saying, what were you thinking? And I've got in my notes here, my question too.
Everybody is so short-sighted in this show. Nobody stops to think about the consequences.
No,
they
never.
Just act on impulse. And the only one who can really get away with acting like that is Mike, because man, he cleans up his messes. Wow.
He does. He's better at it than everybody else's. And it was kind of irritating that both Ian and Robert have now gotten themselves into deep trouble. And they are telling Mike that Mike needs to fix it. Like, oh, guys, you need to stop.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, with all of this going on, Mike is still trying to play the Russians and Constantine against Bunny. And Bunny is going to lure the Russians out to this one area so he can take them out. And he told them he's going to tell the police to not fire at Bunny's people. But I'm 100% sure Mike didn't ever tell anybody on the police squad that that was the arrangement. So it really does look like Mike has decided to clean house. And that's probably one of the most ruthless things he's done in this season, because Bunny's guys are getting shot left, right, and center by the Russians and by the police. And if they do have a season four, I don't know if Bunny and Mike's relationship is going to survive that. I think their friendship might be over if Bunny finds out that Mike did this on purpose.
Do you feel like they've left that up in the air, though, that maybe Mike did try and tell somebody and we just didn't see him tell anybody?
I would hope so, because that's cold. And I mean, yeah. Mike's got the whole reason why they got into that horrible trouble in season two was because Mike was trying to make sure that order was established both inside the prison and outside of it. And if all of Bunny's people get wiped out, it almost feels like we're going to be back in the exact same place, because Bunny's not going to be able to throw his weight around, which means there's going to be other forces that are going to try to take control, and we're right back to where we were.
Yeah. However, I could also see, Mike telling the cops that, but the cops are definitely going to be of the idea, like, if I'm in the middle of a firefight and somebody's firing at me, I'm not going to just avoid shooting them back, because I don't know that Bunny... Who knows? Maybe there was an arrangement in place and Bunny was like, okay, guys, don't shoot at the cops because they're not going to shoot at us. And I'm sure his people are like, no, I'm just going to shoot at them anyway.
And then meanwhile, so much stuff happening in this episode. The warden, he manages to figure out who it was that signaled the sniper or the person who lobbed the grenade in. And it was one of the guards that he's kind of been mentoring. And I thought for sure that he was going to use this to keep his job, because he will be able to tell his boss, I've identified the problem, I've fixed things, now I can stay. But he doesn't. He goes and he talks to the guard and kind of talks around things a little bit. But he makes it clear that he knows that the guard was working with Bunny. And he said, Bunny is not your family. He will use you and throw you away, which is harsh, but fair. So then the warden walks away, and then later on you see him talking with his daughter. And does he talk to his wife too? It feels like he only talked to his daughter, or...
It's been a few weeks since I've watched it, but I feel like he only talked to the daughter.
And it's very clear that he was saying goodbye, because the next thing he does when he gets off the phone is he makes an excuse to walk into the area with all of the dangerous prisoners, the Aryan prisoners, and... And they stab him to death. And just the look on his face when he's standing there and he knows what's coming. And I actually did get teary-eyed, but it was mostly that I was writing the notes down and I was like, bad way to go on his terms. Yeah. And it's just, it's one of the more tragic things, I think, in the whole season, is just that happening. Because, I mean, he hasn't been fired yet. His pension probably still goes to his family. His daughter's still going to be able to get the counseling she needs, because she's kind of like, you know, fraught with anxiety. So it's like he figured out that it was better to go out this way than to try to claw his way back into his prison job by turning in somebody else that he was trying to mentor. So, wow, that was really something.
I also wonder if he did it that way. I mean, some life insurance policies say you can't, you know, your people can't get payouts if you committed suicide.
That's
like
very true.
Some things have anti-suicide clauses. And this one, you know, it's like, I mean, it was suicide, obviously, but he didn't pull the trigger himself.
No. And the whole time he like got on the radio and he was calling into the guard station, prisoner down, I need backup. And then he goes in there. So the whole thing is his pretense for going into a dangerous situation, and they can't really prove that he did it knowing he was going to get shanked to death, even though it was clear that was what was going to happen.
Yeah. Ugh, that's hard to watch.
Yeah. But then meanwhile, Milo is trying to get control back, and he killed one of Constantine's flunkies, and it looked like a bad way to go, because the guy's like hung up from an underpass with a gas mask on his face, which is apparently a way the Russians would kill people, is to put a gas mask on him and then turn the airflow off. But then also he's missing a leg and his intestines are hanging out to the ground. I'm like, oh my God, that was brutal. Mm-hmm. So that he obviously got the information he needed, because Milo shows up on Constantine's boat and is threatening everybody. And at one point he just turns to Iris and says, call Mike. And that is Constantine's sign that Iris has been working with Mike. So eep.
Yeah, it's also through this entire season, Constantine's definitely been going off the rails. I mean, just dipping into paranoia, the stress must be getting to him. The weird thing, though, is this entire time I figured it was like a Milo kind of game and that he would eventually turn on Iris. But spoilers, it seems like Constantine genuinely cared for her this entire time.
Well, it's one of those things that you can have a horrible, horrible person, but they can have a good motivation for one other person and try to help them, while still being a horrible person. But
yeah, which makes it even more tragic that now he finds out that she was never on his side in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mike finds out about all of this as he's also getting calls from the police officers about the gigantic gun battle happening on the bridge.
Right.
Which during the gun battle, Kyle is there. And they're like trying to get people out of their cars and run back to the safe area. And there's an African-American gentleman with his son in the car. And he's utterly terrified. And the son is terrified. And the father has a gun. And he's like, I can't let the gun go. I've got to protect my family. And he's just like, he's not listening to reason. And Kyle is trying to tell him, like, just put the gun down and go away. But he's not listening. And then Robert sees the guy. And Kyle spots what's happening, that Robert is just screaming at him, put the gun down, put the gun down. And Kyle's like, stop, he's got a kid. And Kyle shoots him.
Yep.
And I thought for sure Robert was going to die. But apparently he didn't. He got caught like in the armor plating and maybe took one to the neck. But Ian tells Mike, after all this is done, he's fine. But Kyle gets arrested for shooting a fellow cop. And Mike like tries to talk to Evelyn. And she's like, I told you, any person who gets in the way is going to get arrested. And I can't let him go. And that's just great. But first, before that happened, so Mike shows up on Constantine's boat and talks with Milo. And Milo is like, he wants to have his control of the town back. And he wants Mike to work with him again. And he will offer to let Iris go with the new life that Constantine was trying to get her to accept. But in return, she has to shoot Constantine in the head before she can leave.
Mm-hmm.
I was really hoping she wouldn't. But Constantine was telling her the entire time, just do it, just do it. You are the one good thing to come out of this. And I mean, she's there with the gun, and Milo's got his gun pointed right at her, and she finally shoots him in the head and he's dead. Boom.
Yeah. That storyline done.
Done. But in the nick of time, you hear gunfire upstairs and it's Ian coming to the rescue, and Mike manages to wrestle the gun away from Milo and beats the tar out of him. And Ian comes down there and he says, the backup is coming. And Mike tells him, tell them to not. Just like to go away. So he's standing there with his gun pointed at Milo, with Milo like bleeding. And he tells Ian, take her to the bus station, because he made Iris tell him, I never want to see you again. And he tells her, there's nothing good here for you, not even me. So she leaves. And Milo's just still talking and still trying to like do the psychological thing. And he talked at one point about, your mother didn't die because of me. And Mike shoots him right in the shoulder. And Mike is just looks so tired. And he turns around, you were saying something about my mother? What was it? And Milo said, she didn't die because of me. She died because of you. And Mike shoots him in the head. And that's it.
And done.
Thank God. Even if we do have a season four, it will not be a Where's Milo Now season.
We've had enough of that. Thanks all the same.
Oh, so yeah, and then, you know, Mike goes out and sees that Kyle's been arrested and he can't convince Evelyn to let him go when he's driving back to his cabin. And meanwhile, Iris is on the bus and she takes a couple pills out of her little pill case, like the sedatives or whatever they were. And then the bus stops at a station. Everyone gets out to use the bathroom, and the driver comes back and looks and sees Iris, and she's overdosed, and I'm pretty sure she's dead.
Looks like she's dead. Yeah, I know. And there's all this talk about it. It's like, all right, did she overdose? Like, and if she overdosed, was it on purpose because she wanted to kill herself, or was it an accident? Or did she like accidentally overdose herself because she just took too much? Or did she accidentally take something because someone else actually intentionally poisoned her? You know, we don't know. We have no idea. And if we don't have a season four, we never will.
We never will. Yeah, I took a look. I did a Google search. Mayor of Kingstown, is Iris dead? And I saw the clip from a Screen Rant article from August 26th. And the quote is, Iris's lethal overdose in the Mayor of Kingstown season 3 finale was not intentional, co-creator Hugh Dillon confirms. Dylan explains that Iris's tragic ending is part of the show's attempt to reflect the brutal and unfair nature of real life.
Well, I'm
less enthusiastic about season four now. I'll probably still watch it if another one comes out, but I'm like, damn. Because, of course, you know, the first season with the whole arc between Mike and Iris, it was one of the things that kept me coming back to the show. And now that's gone?
Yeah, it's like they sort of dangled the nature of their relationship in front of us, but it never hit the same heights that it got in the first season, and now it never will.
Now it never will.
Damn it. I have been waiting ever since I saw that. It's just, I mean, I kind of wanted to warn you that it's a real bummer, but then I would give it all away. And so as you got closer, I'm like, shit, you're not gonna be happy. Oh no.
Dear. Well, I'm happy that Milo is finally gone, but I mean, you know, Mike's brother has been arrested. His mom is dead. Robert is obviously going to be a huge pain to deal with after Mike's brother shot him. I don't know. I just don't know. And obviously Evelyn isn't going to back off of Ian either. So everybody's going to be miserable, is miserable now.
Yeah.
And Mike doesn't even know about Iris being dead yet. So great.
And, you know, he may never find out because I think she got on that bus with fake papers. And so I don't know that anybody's going to be contacting Mike. He may just live the rest of his life thinking that she made a new start someplace else and not know that she's dead. And that honestly would be the best possible outcome. Isn't that weird?
It would be. And that would be like, that would have been a fantastic way to end the series. Like if they hadn't left things open with the fact that Kyle's been arrested, or maybe if they had resolved that and it's like, yeah, there's nothing you can do. Your brother, who you have been trying to protect this entire time, is now going to prison. And then had the whole bit with Iris, but make it clear that Mike would just never know. He would just have to think about the idea of her being free somewhere else, you know, away from Kingstown. So, and I mean, they had things like, that mother that shot the person who murdered her son. He had a conversation and she's trying to tell him that he's a good person. She could tell that from the first time she talked to him. And meanwhile, he's talking about all the awful, awful things that he had to do when he got sent to prison for a crime that we still haven't been told what it was. So that's another thing for season four, like the eventual reveal of what exactly did he do to get sent to prison.
Wouldn't it be interesting if what he did was very similar to what Kyle did, you know, did something to try and save someone, but it was technically extremely illegal and it gets you thrown into prison.
Yep. I don't know. It's because, I mean, Evelyn was talking about the fact that everybody has a camera and they got all of it like filmed what happened.
Yeah.
But surely there would be some mitigating factor for the fact that it would also be on camera that Robert was losing it and about to blow away a father and possibly the kid that was in the car.
And honestly, I mean, Evelyn doesn't really like Robert very much. So you know that if she's got to pick a side, she's going to be on Kyle's side. So, you know, that'll play in his favor, I suppose.
I don't know. It's so weird because I liked Robert so much at the beginning of this series.
Yeah.
And yet they've just, it's been one of those things where you're like, yeah, he's a guy who did something good for Mike and he's got a great attitude. He is so freaking dangerous. And now he's unstable. Yeah. He's more unstable than he was.
Ugh. If we find out if we're going to get a new season, we'll sure tell you guys first.
Yeah.
But oh man, we just don't know.
We don't know. Nope.
Okay. In other news, I have caught up on almost nothing this past week. I was watching a lot of YouTube videos. I am on the final episode of Twin Peaks, The Return. I gotta tell you, I mean, I don't want to go too much in detail. There is an episode where we talked about, there are actually a couple episodes where we talked about Twin Peaks, The Return in detail. But man, that one bit where Cooper comes out of the coma and he's being so nice to everybody and he thanks his boss and he's walking away and his boss like, what about the FBI? And he turns around, I am the FBI. And I'm like, yay! So good. Man, it's just, there are some really weird moments and there are some annoying moments and there are so many moments when I'm hitting that little jump forward 10 seconds button because I'm like, yes, okay, yeah, let's move this on. But there are some really good moments in that series.
I need to figure out because there was two tie-in books that were released about this series. And one of them was kind of like, that might have been the secret history of Twin Peaks where it goes all into like back to a settler days, I think, that kind of history. And I'm not sure it's as helpful, but there was another book that wrapped up some storylines from the TV series that I thought...
I've read it.
Oh, have you now? Oh, yeah.
I have.
Oh, cool.
Yes, I did. And you're absolutely right. You get a little bit more information, but just like the show... You know, everybody hoped that when Twin Peaks: The Return came in, they would wrap up a lot of the loose ends from the first series, mm-hmm. and it did. And then it left us with more loose ends. Mm-hmm. And I feel the book does the exact same thing. Yes, there are a few people's stories that you actually get some kind of closure about, and a bunch more that you don't, and you never will.
Nope, never will. We still don't know what exactly was going on with Audrey. Was she like, when she was waking up and looking at herself in a mirror after that dance at the club scene, was she still in a coma? Was she coming out of a coma? I mean,
we don't know. We have no idea. I mean, she definitely looked like she was in a facility for sure. And you've got the one guy, the really super evil guy who had a terrible death. It was her son, most likely from the evil Cooper who came into her room when she was in a coma. Go ahead and connect the dots on that one. Very gross. But yeah, most likely she's been in a facility this entire time and it was all a dream.
Now, I just remember Television Without Pity. Somebody got like a secondhand information about them possibly filming another scene that was never released at the end of the original series. And, you know, it was somebody, a guy whose friend knew that he had really liked the Audrey character. And he was in the area where they were filming. And he said, "Hey, I wanted to let you know they were filming a scene and your girl was filmed running out of a building with her hands on fire."
Oh,
So that was the bank explosion where she had to like handcuffed herself. So maybe, I don't know.
No, I don't know. Somehow, I don't think David Lynch is going to come back to Twin Peaks. I think he's probably wrapped that one up with a bow, as much as David Lynch is capable of doing for anything, honestly.
Yeah. Well, the latest No Such Thing as a Fish episode actually mentioned David Lynch because they're talking about his Dune movie. But they said it's an odd situation to be in because the movie is weird, and yet at the same time, it doesn't really feel weird enough to feel like a Lynch movie. And I'm like, I think that's fair.
Yeah. I would bet it's probably some producer someplace just stepped in and made him tone it down a bit. I heard he didn't ever really want to do the movie, so his revenge was to just make it as weird and nonsensical as possible, and it kind of tracks.
Yeah. Or he wasn't allowed to make the movie that he wanted to make, and that was why he decided he doesn't like the results. And I don't think he ever watched the new Dune movies. I think he specifically said he wasn't going to, probably because it's a part of his life he doesn't really want to revisit. But
yeah, that's fair. That's right. He actually had on social media the other day, he's been diagnosed with emphysema, and he is a big smoker. Mm-hmm. And so he was saying how, because he's been diagnosed, he's given up cigarettes. But it was just, and you know what? Nathan's cousin Emily is the same way. And this isn't like private information because she talks about this on her Instagram page. But David Lynch was talking about how much he just loves everything about smoking. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to talk about, like, obviously it's a terrible habit to have. It's expensive. It is going to kill you one way or the other. But, you know, people don't do it because it's unpleasant.
No.
So it's just, I don't know. Yeah, it's been very hard for him to give it up. But he would also like to stay around for a little longer. So that's why he's doing it.
Yeah, I just remember going to a bar with a friend of mine at one point, and she smoked like a chimney. And she pulled out her cigarette at one point, and the bartender just leaned forward with a flourish with his lighter and lit the cigarette for her. And I was like, oh, non-smokers have nothing like that at all.
We really don't.
You don't have that sort of, there's just nothing that somebody can do, like short of whipping your jacket off and throwing it over a puddle for you. Screams class, I think.
It's really, I've heard from a lot of smokers in my life who talk about the rituals surrounding smoking as one of the best things about smoking.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
However, I don't really need to take on something that's going to trash my health, so I'll avoid it. We got really lucky in college that we were going to school in North Carolina, which is tobacco country, and none of our close friends smoked.
Well, I mean, and Mom was worried that we were going to start smoking because we were going to school in North Carolina, which makes a lot of money, or used to, growing and selling tobacco. But I mean, come on. We grew up in a theater household. If we didn't pick that up from actors, we weren't going to pick that up from anybody.
No. She always talked about the dancers who have like these very, very healthy lifestyles because, you know, they've got to take care of their body and they're doing vegetarian and vegan diets and everything. And they all run outside to go smoke during the intermission. So, you know, there you go.
Well, you
got
to do something to keep that weight off. And apparently it's an appetite suppressant. So
I have heard that. But I guess that's going to wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out PixelatedGeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. Okay, I promised I am going to do a quick review of all of the books that have come out so far in The Nice House by the Sea, because it is most definitely a sequel to The Nice House on the Lake, and it is very weird. And I love all the details about people who are trying to live this life in what's basically a giant bubble because the rest of the world has had the apocalypse and everybody else is dead.
Yeah, yeah. And I have not yet had a chance to read even one issue of this, so I'm curious about your review. No spoilers.
Yes, no spoilers. Anyway, all that and more at PixelatedGeek.com. So no Night Vale next week. So I am this close to finishing up Twin Peaks The Return, but like I said, we've already talked about that. I am on the final episode of the current season of Star Trek Lower Decks, and the new season starts on the 24th.
Okay.
So looking forward to that.
Yay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'm just about ready to watch the first episode of season two. So we will definitely need to talk about that.
Yep. So, including other shiny things that distract us, one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
Start out with a little bit of a news. Actually, let's back that up.
And you see, Warden. Hold on a second. I deliberately went and got the name. Let me try that again. I'm not trying to figure out how I wanted to say that.
No, indeed. Okay, so I just realized we never started this call over. We just hit the 10-minute warning time, so we probably ought to stop the call and start a new one, because I think that'd probably be safest.
Yes, okay, keep recording, and I will start the next call.
Okay, cool.
And leave. Installing updates. Hang on. Every time. Oh, would you hurry up? Come on, it doesn't take that long. Da na 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 na. You can do it. A little bit more. Come on. Why are you frozen? Oh, come on. We're at like the last 95% and it's just sitting there. Yes, finally. But I just opened it. Yes, sign in with Facebook. We've done this before. Come on. Spinning wheel of death. New meeting. How do I invite? Invite. Copy invite link. my browser. Go away. Mint. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Ugh, that took way too long.
That's right.
You're going to have a lot on the to clip out of the recording of me going, come on, are you kidding me?